Having Sage-approved audio for our car rides is a literal lifesaver for my nervous system, and I love making lists of podcasts to share with him when he's ready. I was so excited to hear about a new show called Mysteries About True Histories, affectionately known as MATH, MATH, geared toward the 6+ crowd. Every episode follows two best friends, Max and Molly, who work together to solve riddles and math equations during their time-traveling adventures. Episodes drop every Thursday and are about 15 minutes long, the perfect length for car rides and mealtimes, and stacked with so much laughter that your kiddos won't even realize how much they're learning. So tune in to Mysteries About True Histories with your kids. You can follow and listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pods.
You're listening to Voices of Your Village. This is episode 205. In this episode, we're diving into coping tools. We're looking at coping mechanisms versus coping strategies. I'll go into what the difference between these two are and how we can support kiddos in building coping strategies so they don't just have a toolbox full of mechanisms to numb their emotions and instead can work toward processing their emotions and regulating their nervous system. This is one of the most crucial steps in emotion processing, is knowing how to regulate our nervous system. Stay tuned because next week we are opening up our free 1 week self-regulation challenge. You can sign up next week. The challenge will be from January 10th to January 14th. It's totally free. You can sign up at seedandsow.org. We'll have a little banner right at the top. You can also find sign up in your email or over on Instagram for our self-reg challenge January 10th to the 14th. Come sign up starting next week on January 3rd. All right, folks, let's dive in. Welcome to Voices of Your Village, a place where parents, caregivers, teachers, and experts come to support one another on this wild ride of raising tiny humans. We combine decades of experience with the latest research to create the modern parenting village. Let's dive into honest conversation about real parenting challenges so it doesn't have to be this hard. I'm your host, Alyssa Blass Campbell. Hey everyone, welcome to Voices of Your Village. Today is all about coping strategies. So here's the thing. We often use the term coping mechanism, and I think that we don't really know what that means. I know I definitely did not until I started diving into this research and really what we want to be doing for coping versus what some of us are doing for coping. So I'm going to dive in kind of full force here about what I learned about coping. And it's that coping mechanisms are different than coping strategies. So coping mechanisms are things that we might be doing to help us work through something or to make us not feel what we're feeling, but it's not necessarily what we want to be doing. I'm going to give you some examples of like what as adults we might do as coping mechanisms. We might scroll through social media when we're having a feeling. We might start texting random people or people we know. We might have a drink, might wait for that glass of wine or use a substance. We might exercise excessively. We might start working extra. We might compulsively clean or check and make sure things are safe in a way that we convince ourselves is for health and safety. We might start playing video games. We might go shopping. We might eat. We might take care of someone. So all of these are like, okay, that's fine, right? Like, obviously we go to work. It's okay to have a drink. It's healthy to exercise. Cleaning is a necessity. Eating, we have to do that. Taking care of other people, let's get real. We're all doing that all the time. But it's when we do this to try and make ourselves feel better about something, that's what we kind of want to avoid. They're almost like non-conscious habits. So what do coping strategies look like? I think of coping strategies in two ways. One is preventative and one is reactionary. So there are some things that we do to help keep us in like a healthy mindset. And those are also fall into the coping strategies toolbox. This might be like a meditative practice or going to therapy, going for a walk or hiking in the woods or turning to prayer, maybe cooking or sewing or breath work, exercise, alone time, visual or writing arts expression, musical expression, reading, organizing things, talking to a friend or a loved one. There are a number of things that we do here that we can use preventatively that can help keep us in a healthy mind frame, that can help keep endorphins pumping. But it's when we start to use these things excessively, or if we start to kind of obsess over them, that's when they can move out of our coping strategies toolbox into like a coping mechanism. So now that we have like a rough idea about what coping mechanisms and coping strategies are, and we'll dive in more to this as we go.
This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. Active Skin Repair uses a molecule called hypochlorous acid, which mimics our natural immune response to cleanse, soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support healing. We've been loving Active Skin Repair for all the cuts and scrapes that show up in the active toddler life. Sage loves that there's both the spray version but also a cream version. He likes to get to choose which one he's going to do. He calls it the magic cream. And it's been so great for taking care of Mila's neck rash now that she's full on teething. Can we get a minute for a teething 3.5-month-old? What in the world? Active Skin Repair has thousands of 5-star reviews, and the ingredients so safe and clean, they can be used from the youngest member of the family to the oldest, keeping it simple with one soothing solution for all your family's skin health needs. Visit www.activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair, and to get 20% off your order, use code VILLAGE. That's www.activeskinrepair.com, code VILLAGE, for 20% off your order. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Being back to work after maternity leave has been so good and, frankly, so hard. I love what I do, and I missed collaborating with my team while I was out, and it's been a tough transition. The combination of a packed schedule and still being the milk machine for Mila Bean, it's hard to juggle everything. I feel so grateful for my weekly therapy hour. Sometimes I'm just holding so much and I need a safe space to let it out and get it off my chest. I've noticed that when I don't release it, it comes out anyway, but usually in ways that aren't aligned with how I want to show up in the world. BetterHelp is such a convenient, flexible option for parents who just can't take the travel time to get to an in-person therapy visit. It's entirely online. You can show up in your jammies, always a win in my book, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and you're on your way to feeling heard. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/voices today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/voices.
I want to share with you the 5 phases of emotion processing that Lauren Staubel and I created. Lauren is my co-creator of the SEP method, and she and I are writing the book together on the SEP method to share with all of you. And she's a brilliant woman who I have had the privilege of collaborating with through research and our work together. And as we were reading research and creating our method, we developed 5 phases of emotion processing that everyone's going through when they process emotions. So I'm going to walk you through these bad boys. So the first step is just allowing yourself to express, or allowing a tiny human to express. This is just letting the tantrum happen, or letting yourself cry, letting yourself feel. This is something that down the road we often stifle at like work or in social events where we just try and hold back tears. How many of you have used that expression? I know I sure have. Just last night, somebody texted me and said, I've been holding back tears as I've been watching the Kavanaugh hearing, but thinking of you. And my response to her was, don't hold back those tears. Thank you for thinking of me, but please don't hold back the tears. We have to let ourselves express and feel first. And then, without trying to fix it, just letting ourselves feel. And then we pair vocabulary with it. So this might be, personally, it might just be figuring out, like, what am I feeling? Am I sad? Am I mad? Am I disappointed? Am I scared? Am I excited? Am I happy? Am I nervous? And with the tiny humans as well. I'll often pair an emotion for them. I know there's a lot of discussion and controversy around this of, like, what if we say that they're mad, but really they're sad? I've had kids correct me once they get older when I say, oh, it sounds like you're mad. I've had kids say, no, I'm sad. Okay, sorry. They'll let you know when they get older, but I think it's really important for our younger ones, our infant toddler kiddos, to be giving them this emotion vocabulary so that they're hearing these emotions. And then eventually we want them to be able to identify them on their own, to know what mad feels like in their body and to know what disappointment feels like and embarrassment. And of course, we don't really want them to know, but realistically in life, we know they're going to know, and we want them to learn what it feels like so then they know what to do with it. So the third step is security. And this is a deeper level of emotional intelligence. This is the ability to really feel secure in what you're feeling because you know that it's on a continuum of emotions. What you're feeling right now is like clouds in the sky, and this one is overhead, but it won't be there forever. It will pass. This is where down the road, if someone's stuck in a feeling, this is where we're seeing like anxiety or depression, or when you can't see beyond this feeling and it becomes all consuming. So our goal here is to provide tiny humans with the notion that this is just one feeling and it won't last forever and they will feel other things. Once you have that security, it's easier to let yourself feel. Coping is the fourth one, and that's what brought us here today. I think this is the most missed phase in emotion processing. I think oftentimes we let kids feel something and we might even pair vocabulary with it, telling them, I hear that you're mad. And then we often jump ahead to problem solving and trying to solve their problem. And what I really want to do is slow down, let them be in that feeling, even when it's uncomfortable for us, even when it's inconvenient for us, and building those coping strategies so that they develop the tools to get out of the feeling. It's one thing to know, yeah, I feel sad, and it's a whole different ballgame to know, okay, what do I do with that? How do I not wind up in bed for days? How do I not sob all over the place? How do I not yell and scream at someone because I'm angry? How do I not throw something or hit them because I'm angry? What do I do with feelings of shame and guilt? It's one thing to know what you're feeling, and it's a whole different ballgame to know what to do with those feelings. This is where coping comes in. This is where the rubber meets the road, I feel like my dad would say. My goal for tiny humans, and for me, this starts in infancy, is to help them develop. At first, I would say I really use coping mechanisms for a lot of kiddos, and then I want to move to coping strategies. So what that means for me in terms of tiny humans is I think about it as if they were at work one day and they got mad, what tools would they have in their toolbox to turn to deal with that anger? So if when they get mad, we give them a pacifier, they're not building their toolbox for what to do when they don't have that pacifier anymore. This is where down the road we can see kids really hitting, kicking, biting, bullying, saying rude things, doing rude things, because they never developed the toolbox for what to do with that feeling. Let me get something straight here. I am not anti-pacifier. I think they can be a great tool, specifically in infancy, as a coping mechanism. for kids to suckle and to have something to help their body feel calm. My goal, though, is that by 18 months, they're not using a pacifier to help them feel calm anymore. But they have other tools in their toolbox to pull from when they have a hard feeling. So I'll hit up step number 5 real quick, and then we'll dive into some of this. Step number 5 is conflict resolution or moving on. This is where we are problem solving and where we are working with kiddos to find a solution or help them find a solution, but we shouldn't be getting there until they have really processed the emotion, until they're in a rational brain and able to problem solve with us. If they're still in their amygdala brain, we're not ready to problem solve. For me, this is like if kids are whining, if kids are still crying at me, because it does feel like they're crying at me sometimes, if they're still yelling or crying or expressing their emotion, we have not gone through the coping. We still need to do work before we solve the problem. Even if I know I can very quickly solve their problem, I'm not going to. It's not in their best interest if I do. All right, so let's dive into some coping questions. I got a lot of questions about pacifiers and loveys and blankets. And first of all, I think they are great coping mechanisms. Notice that I said coping mechanisms here, because down the road, they won't be using a pacifier or a lovey or a blanket to help them find their calm. So these are things that they're going to use. These are tools they're going to use right now to help them find their calm. And then we're going to help them move out of that by building coping strategies that are long-term so that they can process their emotion. Because here's the thing, guys. We often talk about social-emotional development, but really, we're talking about social development most of the time. We're saying we want kind humans. We want respectful humans. We want empathetic humans. And believe me, I agree. I also want kind, respectful humans. But they have to learn how to process their own emotions. They have to know what it feels like to feel that feeling. They have to know, this is what sad feels like in my body, and here's how I move through it, in order to bring themselves as a social being to somebody else in a kind, respectful, empathetic manner. If they are sitting with a pile of emotions right on their heart that they can't work through, it's really hard to show up for somebody else. So it's gotta start here, folks. Have you ever gone through the day where you just have this lingering emotion? I was teaching in a classroom with a sweet friend of mine, colleague, whom I love so dearly, and she was just being kind of rude, to be honest. She was snippy. She was short. I kept racking my brain for like, what did I do? What is going on? Like, why is she angry with me? I can't think of anything that I did. And I'm going around in circles. And finally, I just said to her, like, hey, what's going on? I feel like you're being rude to me. And she paused and she was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I got in a fight with my partner last night and that's just been on my heart. Like, I am carrying that with me. We have all been there. We've all been there where we have carried an emotion for far too long and now we're taking it out on somebody else. Here's the thing. We do it to our tiny humans and they do it to us. This is why if we can focus on building this emotional development and building these emotion processing tools so that they can work through their emotions, then we're not talking to a tiny human who has a million emotions sitting on their heart that they haven't worked through. We're not talking to a tiny human who is feeling sad from something that happened at preschool today. We're not talking to a tiny human who is feeling mad because they didn't get what they wanted for breakfast, even though it's dinner now. We're talking to a tiny human who has processed those emotions so that they can show up fully, and that is a beautiful gift. So how do we build coping strategies? Well, I will start by identifying an emotion, allowing those kiddos to express and validating where they are and what they might be feeling. I hear that you're sad. Your mom left for work and you really wanted to keep hanging out with her. And then I pause and I let them feel that and take that in, because sometimes we overload them with information and it's just too much to process. Then, after a pause, I ask them, I wonder what could help your body feel happy? And Can I pause? And if they don't have these tools in their toolbox yet, then I'll offer up two things. Would you like a hug? Or would you like to go read? If they don't respond to either of those, then I will say, I'll give you some space. Let me know if I can help your body feel happy. What we're doing here is letting them know that there's another feeling that exists, happy, that they don't have to feel sad, that they don't have to get stuck in sadness. And then I'm encouraging them to tap into some coping strategies, reading a book, taking space, asking for a hug. When we're consistent in doing this, and let me tell you, consistency is key, then they will build these coping strategies. They will learn what helps them feel calm or feel happy. I really love the word calm. I use it a lot. You'll hear it a lot. I don't know, man. I just think of it as a thing that I want to feel a lot of times. And sometimes I'm not really going for happiness. Sure, like happiness is a great feeling, but sometimes I'm just like, I just want to feel calm again, right? Like I don't want to feel like I'm in this state of disarray. So it's a word that I use a lot. One tool that I love for this are the Todd Parr's feelings flashcards. You can get them on Amazon. Just FYI, there's no frustrated card and there is a mean card, which we don't use when we're talking about the SEP method because mean isn't a feeling. You might act in a mean way because you're having a feeling. You might be feeling mad, so you do something mean, or you might be feeling sad, so you say something mean, but mean isn't a feeling. So we pull out that card. I actually just start with some basics, and you can kind of navigate what works for you, but I like to break it down to about five emotions and stick with some basic ones there.
It's so frustrating to spend the money and effort to buy your kids clothes just to have them grow out of the size within a week, or have your kids complain that they itch, pinch, or just aren't comfortable. If you're with me on this, you've got to check out Posh Peanut. Their sensitive, skin-friendly clothes are made from viscose from bamboo, stretch with your kid as they grow, and they're also made to last. Posh Peanut makes thoughtfully crafted, super cute clothing for kids and families. It is the softest thing, y'all. The design is all done in-house with different patterns, and it came in the mail, and I was like, oh my gosh, I want to wear this for myself every day. Their luxe women's pajamas and robes were all that I wanted to wear postpartum for nursing and hanging out on the couch with Mila. It helps so much that the fabric is breathable and chemical-free, which means they're delicate against Mila's sensitive skin too. And I totally get why Posh Peanut is loved by over 1 million parents. Right now, Posh Peanut is offering our listeners 20% off your first order with promo code VILLAGE. Go to poshpeanut.com/VILLAGE and use promo code VILLAGE for 20% off your first order. That's poshpeanut.com/VILLAGE, promo code VILLAGE.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first five that I use with kiddos that I try to identify are happy, sad, mad, scared, and calm. Then I'll add in excited, and then it just kind of grows from there. But I want it to be something that that's not too big and intense for them, and something that I understand that, like, mad has different things with it, right? Like, you might actually be disappointed, or you might be feeling guilty, or you might be feeling embarrassed, or whatever. And we'll build those later, but it's a lot to throw at kids right away. So with infant toddler, I stick with some basic ones, and then we kind of add to them as we go. But Todd Parr's feelings flashcards have one emotion on one side and then the opposite on the other. So if sad was on one side, happy would be on the other. And I love this because I can show them the sad side and then flip it over and ask them what they could do to help their body feel happy again. It's something tangible for them, and then they can go and grab the card on their own. We had some kids who would carry around the flashcards for their feeling, and I love that. This, again, just lets them know, like, they're not going to feel this way forever and triggers the, like, how can I help my body feel that way? If we're not afraid of getting stuck in a feeling, it's easier to be at peace with the emotion that we have at that moment. So I'm going to provide two options for coping for a little while. Another thing that I love is, so if your kiddo is in, like, a coping mechanism field right now, if they're using a lovey, a blankie, a pacifier, anything that's like just something they can go grab to help their body feel calm, that's fine. It's awesome that they have something so that they're not getting stuck in the feeling and that can help them move through it. I would just be starting to work on, if your kiddo's over 18 months, I'd be starting to work on these coping strategies. Honestly, I'd start it before then, but it's got to be paired with language development too. They go hand in hand. So when we're making this shift, we do it gradually. I would never suggest doing cold turkey because can you imagine, like, if a pacifier helps you feel calm and it's what you know that helps you feel calm and all of a sudden it's just gone and you have no other tools? That would be terrifying. And so I don't want to do that to a tiny human. Instead, what I'll do is let them turn to their pacifier for a minute until it, like, calms them immediately, and then I will say, all right, can I have your pacifier? And then I can help them feel calm. Or I might even, like, switch them out. So pacifier for me is different than, like, a lovey or a blanket because it affects the oral motor development. We have an episode coming up specifically on pacifiers because I get so many questions about them. And I interviewed an SLP, a speech language pathologist, to dive into this, to talk about the oral motor development and the effect that pacifiers can have on speech and language. Because I had a lot of questions that were coming in from you, and then I also had personally that I didn't have the answers to. So I turned to another expert in our field, and she was really helpful, and that episode's coming out for you soon. But I would try and move kids away from pacifiers and into the lovey game so that they at least have something they can, like, hold in their hands while they're developing another tool that isn't affecting their ability to talk back to you, to communicate with you through this, and isn't affecting their oral motor development. So do it gradually. I would be building these coping strategies and offering things like a hug or space or reading or arts expression if you are open to, like, a place they could go draw while they feel calm or to just build with Legos for a minute. Some things that they can just turn to and do to help their body feel calm. I would be using the emotion flashcards during this as well. And then another thing that I have used that I absolutely love is a feelings board. So I will give you an example. We had a little girl who loved pacifier and she was having a really hard time processing emotions and would get her pacifier, but then once it was out of her mouth, she was still in a tough spot, which started to show us that the pacifier wasn't helping her fully process. So we created this board for her. I literally, guys, it was nothing fancy. I took, like, an old box, like an Amazon box, and cut a piece of it. So I had a piece of cardboard to work with, and I put two strips of Velcro on there. And then I took pictures of her with different things. So I took a picture of her with her lovey. I took a picture of her getting a hug from a teacher. I took a picture of her drinking her water. I took a picture of her reading her book. And we just made these, like, I printed them and laminated them and Velcroed them and put them on this board so that she, when she was having a hard feeling, I would just hand the board to her and say, I hear that you're so mad. How can you help your body feel calm? Would you like a hug? And I would point to the hug picture. Or would you like to find your lovey? And I would point to the lovey picture. And so she could tell us what it was she wanted. And it gave her the tools to communicate and, like, work through these. And it was another tangible thing for her to go grab. And then we just made it accessible for her. And within a few weeks, she was using it very freely and on her own. And she would bring us a picture of, like, her lovey. And I would would say, oh, you want your lovey. Can you help me find it? And we would go on a hunt for it and we'd go look for it. And it like empowered her to feel like she could communicate with us about her needs and what could help her feel calm. So I think that using something like that, again, it doesn't have to be anything crazy fancy, but just giving them something to communicate. And sometimes it's enough for kiddos if you're just using language and saying, oh, would you like your lovey or a book? And then they could go, you could like go do that together and find it. If I could give younger Alyssa one tool that I didn't get until my 20s, it would be coping strategies. They are invaluable. So often we find ourselves getting through the day and the emotions add up and then we're like, ugh, by 5 o'clock I am done. And then the tiny humans are challenging because we're done. We haven't processed our emotions all day long. We were just trying to survive them. And now we have to manage our tiny humans' emotions who maybe also weren't processing them all day long. And it ends up in this giant explosion. And I'm just here to tell you, it does not have to be that way. It can be so much easier. And I think coping strategies are the key to raising tiny humans who can process their emotions. So here are some things that are really important to me personally when it comes to coping. And this is how I know tiny humans are not ready to problem solve. If they are yelling or kicking or crying or screaming or hitting or whining, they are not ready to problem solve. So even if they whined at me that they can't get their shoes off, I'm not going to go take their shoes off. Instead, I'm going to say, I can't understand that voice. And I might point to my ear here. I can't understand that voice. I would love to help you when you're ready. How could you help your body feel calm so that you could talk to me? We all need these reminders sometimes. We can all get whiny and cranky and bratty and rude and sassy. And I think it's a beautiful gift when somebody slows us down and says, hey, I'm not going to let you talk to me like this. It's essentially the message that we're sending them. But really what we're doing is helping them process that emotion. They're feeling frustrated. They can't get their shoes off. And if we just jump in and solve their problem, they did not have to work through the frustration. In those little moments, learning to work through that frustration or that anger or that sadness, any hard feelings in the little moments make the big moments easier to tap into those skills. I feel like this episode might have a bunch of questions. So I am going to open up a post on Instagram at seed.and.sow, S-E-W, for you to pop over and throw your questions at me, participate. So head on over to Instagram and stay tuned. Thanks for being on this journey, guys. Can't wait to see you on social media.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the transcript at voicesofyourvillage.com. Did you know that we have a special community over on Instagram hanging out every day with more free content? Come join us at seed.and.sow, S-E-W. Take a screenshot of you tuning in, share it on the gram, and tag seed.and.sow to let me know your key takeaway. If you're digging this podcast, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We love collaborating with you to raise emotionally intelligent humans.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof.
Bye. See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talk to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of there, life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking.